Hello, everyone. I'm Asha Nayaswamy, and we're continuing with our sheltering in place conversations, fireside chats. So let's pray together. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Master, Paramhansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, humbly we bow at thy feet. Bless us with your divine presence. Give us your wisdom and your grace. We are devoted to our divine aspiration. Uplift our energy that we may follow with steadfast clarity and courage your footsteps into the light. Om, peace. Amen. This morning I was wanting to continue somewhat on a slightly lighter vein than, although nothing is really light these days, somewhat lighter vein. Yesterday we talked about joy is within you, and I thought instead of grief, death, or dying, I'd talk about something else. Although when I reflect on what I'm actually talking about, it's not a light subject. This is actually out of on page 365 of the Light Bearer book. You won't find more in the book than I'm going to talk about. In fact, you'll find a little less. But the basic idea that I'm going to talk about is in the year 1994, page 365. This is the biography I wrote of Swami Kriyananda, and it's a year-by-year account of the 45 years that I spent in close association with him, just every year of his life chronologically, the major events, what he was thinking, how he explained himself. It's gotten very good reviews. So if you're interested at all, I think you'll like it. I also recorded an audiobook, so if you prefer, you can listen to it. Many people like the audiobook better because, of course, I can see in my mind as I read it, I remember it. So there's an extra dimension added into it. So what I want to talk about is a very interesting sort of observation that Swamiji made about the destiny of the planet. I included it in 1994 in that book, but my recollection is that he said it much earlier. I had to sort of do a little self-doubt here because that book is chronological, and I believe, I have always stated that I was extremely loyal to when Swami said things so that the reader will have information revealed to him in the same way that I lived through it. And I actually believe Swami talked about this decades before 1994, but anyway, here it is. So there's nothing I can do about that. That was just a little oh my that I noticed when I looked it up today. Here's the story. Swamiji was talking about, and that's why I think it was earlier, he was talking about the transition of the yugas, which has been the subject of a whole other broadcast I gave, so I'm going to just assume it. The transition of the yugas from the material age of Kali into the age of energy, which is Dwapara. The transition of 200 years, the nadir of Kali Yuga began, I have to give this whole picture. This theory is not a theory, it's an established understanding from the Indian side that Sri Yukteswar explained, and Yogananda talks about in Autobiography of a Yogi. It's that a planet goes through a cycle of higher and lower civilizations on that planet. It's not like we start dark, we just get better and better and better. People think of it in this very linear manner. The Indian concept is that it's circular. And as I'm just giving the summary so you get the point. It's an astronomical, not astrological, it's astronomical phenomenon where the solar system that is ours, that we move closer and farther away from the center of our galaxy. And the closer we are to the center of our galaxy, the more energy there is on the planet, and therefore the more enlightened it is. This is a complicated dynamic because the planet itself is just the backdrop for the evolution of the soul. And from the astral world, we choose whatever planet is at whatever stage of enlightenment is necessary for our soul evolution. This, again, is also the subject of other of the broadcasts I've given, but I wanted to have the context. And this is on planet Earth. Sri Yukteswar says it's a 24,000-year cycle, 12,000 years ascending, 12,000 years descending, and then starting over again. And the four ages are Kali, the age of matter, Dwapara, the age of energy, Treta, the power of thought, and Satya, the age of spirit. And when we go up from Kali to Dwapara to Treta to Satya like this, it doesn't go from Satya to Kali. It goes Satya ascending, Satya reaches its apex, and then it begins to decline. And then we go declining Satya, then we enter into Treta, and then Treta gets worse and worse. Treta then goes into Dwapara, Dwapara gets worse and worse, and we hit the nadir. Now, masters incarnate all through this. Krishna incarnated at the transition between Dwapara and Kali going down. Yogananda incarnated at the transition between Kali and Dwapara going up. So it's a parallel, but on the two sides of it. So all of the, Jesus incarnated in Kali descending, the nadir of Kali Yuga was 500 AD. And that was when we began to start up the other side again. Each age has a certain length, and the higher ages are longer than the darker ages. And there's also a couple of centuries of transition, again, in proportion to the length of the yuga. So the transition of the age of matter into the age of energy was 1700. Dwapara proper started in 1900. And if you look at it historically, you know, the entire world transformed starting at that point. Everything that we think of as modern, you know, steam engines, electricity, telephones, airplanes, everything. 1900 is when it really began to take off and the whole world changed. What we see on the planet today is we have both legends and then we also have empirical evidence that people can't understand. For example, we look back at the pyramids of Egypt. And on the linear cycle, we just don't understand. If we on a linear cycle where everybody used to be in the caves and now we've advanced to the apex of civilization. I mean, it's so depressing to think this is the apex of civilization. One of the reasons I love the yugas is that we don't have to think that. But this from absolute caveman barbarianism to now, you don't know what to do with the pyramids as an example. And so people have all these complicated theories about how they were built, you know, with ramps and thousands of slaves and so on like that. But the engineering of those pyramids, the exactness of the stones, the weight of the stones, the placement of the pyramids, the extraordinary phenomenon of their relationship to the stars and to the moon and to different seasons and Stonehenge and all kinds of things in India, none of it makes any sense from on a darkness, a linear progression. However, it makes a great deal of sense if you realize that ages were more advanced and then the understanding was lost. Swami wrote, I was wondering if I have a copy here, he wrote the book called The Time Tunnel, which is a fiction book he wrote. And it was like sort of, it was sort of a children's book, but it's a great book for adults. It was from reading The Time Tunnel that I first understand the illusory nature of time, because he was explaining it for juveniles. And then, I got it into my brain. I asked him to write a Bhagavad Gita for young readers also, because maybe then I could understand it better. But the advantage of writing fiction, Swami and I laughed about this. I said, the advantage of writing fiction is that you don't have to justify your intuitions. You can just put them out there because it's fiction. But you can put exactly what you know to be true without having to explain it. And so Swami, in the time tunnel, these two young boys go backwards and forwards in time. And in part of the story, he took them back to Atlantis, and he also took them back to the pyramids. And in the pyramids, since I was speaking of it, he described this whole scene where they created sound waves with these unique instruments. And then the sound waves actually had the power to move the stones, to both cut and move the stones. It was all done with sound. Now, nowadays, you know, we take ultrasound for granted. We understand now that much of the time, if you have kidney stones, they don't have to cut open your body. They can bombard those kidney stones with sound waves and dissolve the kidney stone while it's still inside your body. We just take that for granted now, that sound has that kind of power. We don't even know what it is. It's just, oh, I'm pregnant. I'm going to go get an ultrasound. We're using technology that we don't, that just seems natural to us. And at that time, it was natural to them. But it was Kali Yuga descending. It was Dwapara Treta Kali. Treta Dwapara Kali descending. And gradually, these things were lost. But the physical evidence remains. But what will happen is when we reach the same point on this side, then we will understand the same technology. So there's many, many mysteries about those pyramids that people are beginning to speculate about. And as we get more advanced technology and can literally look into them with sound waves, we're beginning to sort of see and know things that we didn't know before. And when we reach the same level, this time ascending, it'll be understood. It's fascinating. Now, much more can be said. The myth of Atlantis has also always been there, that there was this highly advanced age and that the whole continent sank into the ocean. Plato talks about the myth of Atlantis, and many, many traditional cultures, virtually all, have these traditions that are handed down of these much higher ages and what life was like then. When Swami went in the time tunnel to Atlantis, what he presented was what is understood to be true by those who study these things, that what happened to Atlantis, it became more and more technological. And as the technology became more and more intense and began to dominate the society more and more, the humanity began correspondingly to decline. And attunement with nature, with the world, with natural forces began to decline until that civilization became so out of balance that it of its own out of attunement with divine law, it just collapsed. And the whole, you know, earthquakes and floods came and the whole thing was wiped out. This is the tradition. And verified by many sources. I'm not going to try to justify it here. Now, bearing in mind that the souls that incarnate into each of these ages, this again is in other of these many other videos that I've given, a soul has certain karma. We, as individual jivas, individual sparks of the infinite, we have certain karma, and karma is an unlearned lesson. An unlearned lesson about the nature of reality, about God is the only answer, that all fulfillment we seek will be found from the joy within. You know, everything comes to be at peace. So we don't necessarily always know that. We don't know that. If we know that, we become God realized. The whole journey of the jiva is working through what I conveniently call alternate theories of happiness, to see whether being an opera star, being a great scientist, being a millionaire, being a barbarian king who gets to kill anybody I don't like, you know, will actually make me happy. Because all of it looks attractive from a certain level of consciousness. And as we come up from the lower to the higher levels, we get enamored and we have to test it. So we get to incarnate, we get to be in the astral world, and we get to choose where it is. And if we have this fascination with technology and this belief that technology will save the planet, and if we can get enough, you know, of the right kind of technology in place, then everything will be perfect. We get to incarnate on a planet where those things get to happen. And we may not learn the lesson all at one time, because it takes a long time for us to get clear about these things. Just think about our one incarnation, how slowly we master anything. It's really stunning. Excuse me, I have to sort of try to get my throat clear with this menthol. It's really stunning when you think about it, how long we can remain deluded, how long we can keep fooling ourselves. So we have to play these things out over and over again. Also, when you think how long it takes, this, I'm so sorry about this. It wasn't happening for a few days and I got a little cocky. Also, when you think it, how long it takes to really get good at something, you know, you see a brilliant technological innovator like Steve Jobs, for example, you know, who was just this sort of plugged in powerhouse of innovative ideas. When his coworkers would talk to him about, you know, doing market research to find out whether people wanted what he was talking about. And he said, of course they don't want it because I haven't invented it yet. You know, he was very extremely self-directed, and he didn't ask people what they wanted. He created it and showed them how it would benefit them. He completely transformed our world, just one person. But think how many lifetimes of work it took for him to get to that point of skill. And if our interest is in scientific innovation, which is God-inspired, you must understand, you know, we can use that innovation to serve mankind, or it can become an aberration. It can go in any direction. So these inclinations within us and the necessity to have these experiences are not necessarily settled quickly. And you can imagine a jiva hopping around creation, just going from planet to planet that provides the right atmosphere for him or her to be able to do what they need to do. So on the basis of sort of all that as a picture, Swami Kriyananda made an analysis of society as we're living in it. As I said, I wrote this in 1994, but I remember him saying it much earlier. And he talked about on the planet at this time, and we're really seeing it acting itself out right now. On the planet at this time, Swami said there are four main groups, is how he called it. And do we identify with these groups for long periods of time, or are they just sort of vibrational thought forms that are held that we move in and out of? I can't really answer the mechanics of it. But on the planet right now, he said there's four main incarnational groups. One group is the Atlanteans. And the particular Atlanteans he's speaking of are those who are absolutely fascinated with technology, whose interest and divine responsibility is to do that part of things. Now, bear in mind, Master himself said, for example, he said that he put the idea into the mind of a research scientist to create the series of drugs called antihistamines. Now, I don't know anything about that, but when Swami mentioned that to Dr. Peter Van Houten at Ananda Village, Dr. Peter is very well informed in the medical world, and he was very impressed. He said antihistamines was a turning point in the understanding of medicine, that once they understood whatever that innovation was, a great many other things were able to happen. So even though one can criticize a certain amount of modern medicine has completely transformed the world. The lifespan of people, the lack of debilitating diseases, you know, the eradication of many terrible things on the planet has been because of these scientific advancements. So Master himself is involved in that. The masters are inspiring us. Steve Jobs, interestingly, he was dedicated to Autobiography of a Yogi. It was famously the only book he had on his iPad, and he said he read it faithfully once every year. And he alone set us on the course of Dwapara Yuga, which must happen. The aberration of that is something else. But the technology itself is beneficial. It depends how it's utilized. But what is happening with the Atlanteans, Master Swamiji said, is that the same group that was so obsessed with technology that they became completely divorced from the harmony of the natural world and the true feeling of humanity that brought that civilization down, they're busy and they're going to do it again. And so now I know a lot of these conspiracy theories are talking about implanting these, whatever, I don't know much about this, implanting these chips in under our skin, and that we'll be able to be tracked, and then authoritarian governments will be able to take care of, you know, to rule our lives. And already facial recognition software is taking away a tremendous amount of people's privacy. And yes, it's going to make it easier to apprehend the criminal element, but what about all the rest of us? You just see technology without the appropriate moral fiber does not necessarily lead to a golden age. But nonetheless, technology itself can free us from an enormous amount of physical imperatives. So the moral, lack of moral understanding of how to utilize it has to be separated from the technology. But what Swami said is that a lot of the Atlanteans who brought Atlantis down are here now, and the Swami says quite cheerfully, and they're going to do it again. So that's one group of people incarnated here. The second group of people incarnated on the planet with us now, Swamiji said, is the Romans, those who are responsible for the fall of the Roman Empire. And the fall of the Roman Empire was because of this passion for sensuality, for sexuality, for all kinds of physical indulgence and the enjoyment of power, having power, selfish power over other people. And the Romans, Swamiji said, are in charge of the entertainment business. And a lot of the Romans are also in politics. And they're just a self-indulgent, selfish people who are exceedingly materialistic, not spiritual. Look at the entertainment industry. I mean, look how systematically, and I have to just say it in plain English, the morals of our society have been totally corrupted by the entertainment business. Just what used to be considered absolutely scandalous pornography is now just available on ordinary television. And you hear this music that is so ego-affirming and so violence-affirming, and everybody's just rushing to do it. And all of that not only reflects consciousness, but it creates it. So the Romans are here doing it again. They're just advocating and promoting a kind of base sensuality that just takes everything down. And people's attitude towards sex today is really astonishing. Swami made the interesting comment once, and I only heard him say it once. He said, there's so much focus on sexuality completely divorced from relationship or love or anything uplifting. He said that many souls are being conceived in an atmosphere of pure lust, is how he put it, pure selfish lust. He said, and that's not a vibration that attracts high souls. So it becomes self-perpetuating. This is not sex is bad. This is separating anything that's uplifted or refined and making ourselves into animals on purpose, you know, just on purpose, reveling in our animal nature, forgetting about God and refinement and the union of souls for a higher purpose. Forget all of that. Just pure sensuality. You know, food, sex, intoxicants, drugs. He said, and the Romans are all here, and they're all doing it again. And many of them are in politics, and they're doing it again. You know, Nehru played his fiddle while Rome was burning. What do I care? We don't have to look very far to see it. So that's that whole side. And all those people are in power, and they're very, very prominent. This, I'm talking about America right now. This whole discussion is America, the USA. They're all in power. They seem to be the ones who are running it. Technology, science, sensuality, selfish power. Now there's two other groups that are very, very prominent in America, but they're much more underground. And it's two kinds of Indians. One are the Indian India's the East Indians, which is, as Swami put it, many of us, and I will put that, many of us are in Western bodies, but our whole orientation toward life and our understanding is much more from India. So just the whole way of seeing all of life as spiritual, understanding self-realization as the true goal, realizing the laws of karma, the power of magnetism, of energy, devotion to the guru, recognizing the sages, meditation, true prayer, true communion. I was 18 years old. I picked up a book by Swami Vivekananda, who I'd never heard of. I just read a few pages. I knew it. I just knew it right away. It was just mine. I took a Western body, but the Indian view of life is who I am. And there's a lot of us. And we are this huge spiritual movement. I mean, now, 50 years from the day I started on this, there's a lot more understanding and familiarity. And we're bigger than we were, but we're still very small in the whole story. Very small in the whole story. And we don't have any power. We don't have any political power or power, seemingly worldly power. The other group of Indians are the Native Americans. Indian is the word that's used, but Native Americans is what we call the indigenous culture that was here when the Europeans started colonizing. Now, very interestingly, in the Indian tradition, in the Native American tradition, they themselves knew that they were the remnant of a great people. They had their own tradition of the great age of their people. And they were annihilated in a brutal way, which Master said has created some bad karma for America, which is why we will have to go through some troubles. But overall, he said, we have good karma, but that was bad karma for us. But the true Indian, the Native American people, knew that was coming. And they knew that their culture as such had been from a much higher age, and this was the end of it. They were greatly diminished in population, greatly diminished in power and effectiveness, and the European settlers just came in and took them away. But we came back, and I also count myself among that group. And we lived, when we were Native Americans, we understood Mother Earth. And our whole understanding of spirituality was in tremendous harmony with everything, all creatures, all living things, the stars, the moons, the animals, the air, the sky, the rivers. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of evidence, physical evidence of that culture, because we didn't need to build like that, because we lived so much in harmony. We lived very lightly on the world, in the world. And Swami jokingly said all of those Native Americans, their land was stolen from them. So many of us, he said, were born back as white people wealthy enough to buy that land back. And especially in the 70s and 80s, many, many of these white young people moved back out onto rural areas, wilderness areas, and started recreating that life in harmony with the natural world. And the East Indians are leading the new spirituality movement, and the Native Americans are leading the ecology movement. You know, see, these are these very long trends. And neither of the Indians have a lot of power yet, perceived power, but there's a tremendous amount of magnetic power, because there is the power of Dwapara Yuga truth. And, you know, when you build a building, first you dig a big hole, and then you start building up. And it takes time before it breaks the surface, and then more time before the building is finished. Swami's prediction is that the Atlanteans and the Romans are going to bring it down again. And when they bring it down, and many people say that what we're going through right now is the beginning of this, Yogananda predicted great changes in all countries, but this is how it will play out here, that they'll bring it down again. Now, oh, here's what he said. The East Indians know, the two kinds of Indians know about each other. All the Indians can see the Atlanteans and the Romans. The Romans and the Atlanteans can't really see the Indians. They have sort of a vague sense that they're out there, but they don't take us seriously at all. We're just kind of a nuisance. They're the ones who think they have the power. But they will bring the civilization down. And as Swami put it, the ones who are left will be quite surprised to realize how much the Native Americans and the Indians reincarnated have in place here. And that the new civilization, the Dwapara Yuga civilization, will be built by that, from that spirit. Isn't that interesting? I just, every time I look around and think about what's happening, just, it's such a fascinating way to just step all the way back and sort of see everything that's happening, not as some kind of who's doing what to whom, but to realize that all of those forces, they're just puppets. They're puppets for this much greater destiny that the masters, that God and gurus and all the masters are in charge of. Early in this cycle, I gave a talk that I called Who's Pulling the Strings? And I was quoting my friend Sherjo from India, who said, what's going on right now is so peculiar, it can't be created by man, even though men and women are acting out parts. He said, only Babaji could make something like this happen. And that's where we need to be thinking. And that gives us both courage and joy to take step by step whatever's asked of us and to play our little part in this cosmic drama. God bless you.